Fatima, where heaven and earth have met. Since the day our Blessed Mother visited her cousin Elizabeth, she has never stopped visiting her people and care for them in time of need, reminding them of the gospel of her son. This happened in Guadalupe, Mexico, and then in Lourdes, France. Let us now hear what was the purpose and message of her visitation in Fatima on every 13th of the month from May to October in 1917. Here now is the director of Radio Maria Canada, Father George Amaro.
Welcome, brothers and sisters, to this new episode about Fatima. And the message is important, but the messengers are also important, because somehow the messengers always tilt the message. That's one of the reasons I usually give for Jesus himself, for the Son of God to incarnate, to give the proper message, to tell us how God is, because he is God and he knows God the Father and the Holy Spirit. And so because the prophets that were messengers always tilt the message according to their way of thinking, their prejudices, their knowledge about science and other things. So they always change a bit the message. So God had to come himself to tell us straight, without prejudices and without many inconveniences and beliefs, to tell us straight about us, about human beings, by being a human being, to show us the way to incarnate the truth and the life that he wants us to live, and to be with us, especially through the Holy Spirit that he sent us. And so that's the whole purpose of incarnation. And in Fatima we have three messengers, and the three of them, they are all different. There is no one like the other. And in a way they are complementary, and that's why they became friends. Sometimes people on friendships, they look for what we have in common. I guess it is important to have something in common. And indeed, these three little shepherds, they have something in common. They were family. Two were brother and sister, Francisco and Jacinta, and Lucia was cousin. So they had something in common already, some genes in common, some blood in common. But then, what makes people... What makes people to be attracted to each other, I believe, are first of all the things in common. But what keeps people being still attracted, and what keeps people together for a longer time, or even forever, that's not really what they have in common. It's when they find out that somehow they complement themselves, that one has things that the other doesn't have. And so there is a complementary point. Having things in common, yes, but then being complementary, it's also important. And these three kids, they are complementary, because they have three different personalities. And since that's my belief, and my thinking is from human psychology. And when I say human psychology or existential psychology, is the one that comes through Freud. And the scientific psychology, so to say, is the one that comes through Watson, that experiments with pigeons, with rats, with mice, and with other animals to take conclusions about humans. That's quite funny. I'm not into that sort of psychology. I'm more into the human existential psychology, that is the hair of Freud, to investigate the subconscious and other things like I don't think pigeons and rats and mice have a subconscious anyway. And so that's what I'm interested in. And within this psychology, there are three main personalities that somehow are based in three different places of the body, the mind, the heart, and the gut. So there is gut people or instinctive people, and then there is emotional people that are more connected with their heart. And then there is mental or brainy or cerebral people that are more in touch with their brains. Also, these correspond to three different brains. That's also my belief. I understand that many other people don't, some science don't accept this, that these three brains that we have, and for me, it just makes sense with the evolution of the species. All life is tied together on this planet. All life have things in common because it comes from a common trunk. It comes from a common origin. In the ocean, a small bacteria or a photosynthesis cell that started to make photosynthesis, and from plant life we went into animal life and so forth till human beings. And so there is everything in common. And in earth the animals, a big stage is the reptiles. And the reptiles, they have a brain that is called the reptile brain or the limbic brain. At the end, it's just a small point at the end of their colon, at the end of their vertebra, spinal cordon. And so we too have that brain that is a rudimentary brain that is, it doesn't do much thing, it doesn't do thinking, certainly doesn't think, it just commands the mechanisms for life, and has only three behaviors: attack, retreat, run away, or hide, or get silence, don't make any noise, don't make any movement, or hide, or attack, or run away. So those are the three things that this brain does. And then, of course, as we know, probably because of that big comet or meteorite that came from the sky that hit our planet, and then the dinosaurs and many reptiles, because they didn't have a constant temperature there, they just only the small reptiles managed to survive. The big reptiles died out. And there is another sort of life that came into being that the mammals. And the mammals, we have now the biggest animals are not reptiles anymore. We don't have dinosaurs. And the mammals are the big ones, the bigger ones, the elephant on Earth and the blue whale in the ocean. Those are the biggest animals, and they are mammals. And these mammals, these mammals have a different brain, because somehow they are more emotional, because they spend time with their kids. The females spend some time with their kids. Remember that the reptiles, there is no bond between kids and between kids and parents, so to say. There is no bond. They are born of eggs, and so there is no bond. There is no time of acculturation. But that in mammals, depending on the mammals, the closer they are to human beings, the more time they need to be a culture, to learn things, because before they become adults. And of course, human beings are the ones that take a long time to become adults. So this is the second personality, the emotional people, the sentimental people, the one that live their life around their feelings. And then we have the brainy people. The brainy people are the ones that are more mental, and they are connected with the neocortex, the really human brain. The biggest part of our brain is the neocortex. These brains, these three brains, as I told you, they are organized together like in a matryoshka, in a Russian matryoshka. So the small one, the reptile brain, is within, and then over it comes the mammal brain, and still over the mammal brain comes the neocortex. Now, are we completely mental people or gut people or emotional people? Nobody is any of these 100%. But one of those centers are our preferable, the one that we act most out of. The one that we use most. So let us say, using the language, the genetics language, it would be like, one is our preferential one, the primary one. The second would be secondary or dominant, the first, recessive, the second. And the third, we almost don't use it, but you still use it. So an instinctive person, most of the instinctive people, as we will see in the second half of the program, they are instinctive, and since they look for power, then they use their second preference is brain. So these are people that connect, make a bypass over emotions. They connect the reptile brain with them, with the neocortex, to become more powerful and overlook emotions. And that's the way it is. I see myself being like that. But that doesn't mean that I don't have emotions. Of course I do, but they are not the important issue in my life. So, just to summarize all these three centers of our behavior, and there are, of course, each of these three centers having the Enneagram on my mind. Each of these three centers, there are other three that come out of these three centers, But the main ones are so gut people, emotional people, and cerebral people. Now, the three kids, you see, it's the only apparition where we have three kids, because the apparition of Lourdes, there is only one, that is Bernadette, and the apparition of Guadalupe, there is only one, that is Juan Diego. In Fatima, we have three kids. Yes, Fatima is a very complete apparition, very complete by all means, theologically, as we have seen, and we will see still. And it's also complete because each of these kids belongs to one of these centers. Let us make a small pause, and then I'll tell you which one is each one. So as I was telling you before the break, we have three kids and we have three personality centers, three different personalities, and they are complementary, so that's why they were big friends. So if I asked you from what you know about the personalities of these three kids, you probably would be able to tell me which one is the cerebral, which one is the the emotional and which one is the gut, the instinctive. And probably think about it, and I'm going to tell you, and probably, most probably, you will be right. We have little to do with instinct, and so the, you know, two kids died, one on the next year in 18, and the other in the following year, Francisco and Jacinta, and the one that remained is the one that we need most, the cerebral one. We need, and that's Lucia. Lucia, she is the mental one. She has an elephant memory. So she recollects everything that our Blessed Mother told her. But remember, that's one of the things that I cannot understand in this apparition in Medjugorje. The Vatican is inclined to approve the first apparitions, but not the ones, the everyday ones, with big texts. I cannot understand. And so the visionaries, the ones that experience our Blessed Mother, are they there listening and writing the messages? They are so long, these messages. In the ones of Fatima, they are short. And the apparition itself is short, and having a person being this so important, well, Lucia remembered everything that our Blessed Mother told her. She remembered everything, and she wrote it down. So she is the cerebral one, she is the mental one, and the one that was to remain here till 2004. At the age of 94 or 95 years, when she passed away, when Fatima was somehow closed with the revelation of the third secret or the third part of the prophecy. Now, the emotional one, of course, is Jacinta. The emotional one is Jacinta, and Francisco is the gut person, is the instinctive one. And they both, the three of them, live the message of Fatima in a different way. Jacinta was the one to offer sacrifices, you know, that has to do with emotions for the conversion of the sinners. And Francisco was the one to pray the rosary, so prayer. Francisco was more for prayer. The hidden Jesus, as he called him, he would spend hours and hours in front of the tabernacle trying to console the hidden Jesus. The hidden Jesus, that's the way he called him. So this is Francisco, and his way of praying is more contemplative. That's why the rosary is the prayer that suits him, because the rosary is a contemplative prayer. The way I'm writing in my blog, Itinerant Mission, I'm writing about the rosary the whole year. The rosary, and I look at it as a contemplative prayer. Then Jacinta is more emotional, so her spirituality would be more like St. Francis of Assisi, and she would be more emotional, more in touch with the beauty, appreciating the beauty, the music, and all the arts, and the sights, and she was very emotional with the little lambs, and so she is the emotional one, and her living of Fatima was more like the sacrifices she offered for the salvation of sinners. And then the one that is left here, that was left here for most, for the whole 20th century till the end and beyond, And that was the messenger of Fatima, the gospel writer of Fatima, so to say. And the guardian also, the guardian of the doctrines of Fatima, the one that was supposed to supervise even the consecrations of Russia, as we said, supervise the Pope when all the popes consecrate Russia. And she would be the one saying that consecration was valid or not valid. So that's Lucia. So let us speak about this instinctive personality. And next program, we will devote the whole program to the personality of Francisco. That's now, since Francisco is a visceral person, is a gut person. So let us talk about how the gut person are. So they tend to be impulsive because their attention is always turned outwardly on resolving problems and everything. The visceral person is always in a state of alertness to be able to control everything and everyone around him, plus controlling himself. He is a good controller of himself too. The vital energy of the visceral people is anger or rage, which can appear in speech or attitude, even in people who do not openly express their anger, as they may have adopt a technique to contain it, or may even be unaware of it, but it is there. And this is precisely Francisco. Francisco might not be unaware of his anger, but he's there. They seek power and are very critical of those who hold it in matters of justice and truth, or even regards to their ability to hold on to power they have. In this sense, they are skillful at coup d'etats, or pulling the rug from under the feet of those who hold power unjustly or undeservedly. At all times, they deal with situations as if they were a matter of survival of life and death, because, you know, they are more connected with the reptile brain, so they are they tend to look at all subjects as a life and death thing. As there is a correlation between the reptilian brain and the instinctive personality, it's not hard to conclude that the instinctive people are action people. The reptilian brain does not think or feel. It has only three responses, as I told you: fight, flight, or freeze, or hide. Therefore, instinctive people place more importance on action than on feeling or thinking. Their viscera, the gut, or the instinct are the primary motive of their personality. As humans as they are, they need the other two brains. Oddly enough, the instinctive brain tends to bypass the limbic brain to communicate with the neocortex, to do humanly justify and enlighten its action, therefore marginalizing emotions and feelings. To justify his action, to find a reason for his actions. And many times those reasons could be rationalizations. But anyway, there are still reasons to justify their actions. The instinctive need the neocortex, but they don't waste much time with it like the cerebrals, who go around and round a question and, consumed by doubts, never come to a decision. The instinctive think, process the problem quickly, reach a conclusion and take action. Often the solution comes through intuition, which is their strongest weapon. So it's, you see, they have the reason, but they are not reason people. They use it, and so they are not consumed by doubts because their intuitions come from the gut, and in a way they are always right. They don't need to observe, they don't need to think much about it. Intuition is the process of coming to knowledge, and certainly of something quickly, without the slow deliberation of thinking that operates in the logical, deductive way. It is difficult to define precisely because it is not a conclusion drawn at the end of an intellectual process. It is similar when we observe someone's body language and our subconscious mind interprets and deciphers that body language, and we quickly come to a conclusion about that person. That's instinctive people. They are very good readers, very good observers of body language, and for them is more important the body language which they are reading always, all the time, more than what the person says. The instinctive are good observers, and no detail escapes them. All details are seen, judged, and evaluated, even unconsciously, eventually motivating the intuitions. They observe the body language, the tone of voice, the words that others choose to express themselves. Everything is thoroughly observed and evaluated. Intuition is based on the belief that the universe and its all aspects and manifestations operate by obeying the same rules. So that's why it is possible to have metaphors, comparisons, allegories, parables, or analogies. It's because we can compare one thing with the other, and because the same rules operate the universe at all levels, at all subjects, and so it's possible to obtain the truth out of different walks of life. The instinctive or visceral people, instead of operating from the neocortex, taking into account the other two brains, somehow they subvert human nature or ignore evolution and operate from their reptilian brain, using or manipulating the other two, especially the neocortex, to which the reptilian brain connects directly and uses as a database for intuitions. For the instinctive people, the cerebrals live on the moon, while the emotional are crying babies of this world. Only they themselves are pragmatic and functional, because they have both of their feet firmly planted on the ground, and they make things happen. See, these are active people. And that's the way the instinctive people look at the other people. The value of a man is its works. A person is not measured by what he feels or by what he thinks and says, but by what he does. You see, this is how instinctive people look at life. As the saying goes, hell is full of good intentions. So, in a way, you can correlate all these things to Jesus. Probably Jesus was an instinctive person. Sensation is all the instinct people value. They tend to be impatient and impulsive, therefore inclined to put the cart before the horse, and as many as their deeds are neither premeditated nor deliberated, they often make mistakes because they act on their intuitions that might also be wrong. The instinctive people are people of projects, of actions, of doing things, so they don't get lost in their thoughts. People that are in touch with their instincts, they tend to be introvert. They need silence and solitude to be in touch with themselves. Contrary to what people think, an introvert is not an antisocial person. It's just as an extrovert is not an altruistic social person. The extrovert needs others to be himself, while the introvert does not depend on others. He can enjoy the company of others, but quickly tires and needs to return to his solitude. because it is where he regains his vital mental energy and can connect with himself. And we see that in Francisco. He wants to be alone. Sometimes he doesn't want to be in the company of the other two. Of the three personalities, the instinctive or visceral get angry the most and are easily irritated, but they are also the first to forgive and to ask for forgiveness, the first to turn the page and to move on. They repeat to themselves and to others, passed waters do not move mills. The instinctive avoid holding grudges and resentments, or staying angry, sad, or depressed, since this takes away the energy they need to their intuition to work. So they quickly move on. They are not there. They are very easily to ask for forgiveness and to forgive. This is the good thing they have. For instance, emotional people, since they get more hurt, then it's more difficult for them to forgive or even to ask for forgiveness. So we leave it here, and next time we will be speaking about the concrete personality of Francisco, and you can see how he really matches this instinctive personality.
You have been listening to Fatima, Where Heaven and Earth Have Met, with Father George Amaro. Thank you for joining us today, and we pray that this program is an encouragement to you. Please join us here on Radio Maria Canada, where Father George Amaro will continue his teaching about our Blessed Mother and the significance of Fatima.